How you doing? I'm Kevin. I'm an alcoholic. Sober by the grace of God. Recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It's a pleasure to be here. Honor. Life is awesome. It just happens. I do simple things every day. You know, I do these. I just keep doing them and keep doing them and stay out of the way for the rest of my life, and just awesome things happen. Like getting to speak at my home group, you know, and getting to meet people here and build, you know, friendships that, you know, are really amazing. And it all comes from one relationship, you know, that I had to go through a process to build, you know, to initiate, to learn, to build. And that process is right here, the 12 steps, you know. So a brief recap on, you know, step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Dash, that our lives had become unmanageable. What does that look like for me? What does it look like for Kevin? You know, well, I couldn't stop drinking, and every time I wanted to, I did finally stop or get stopped, I would always start up again. Coming to AA meetings didn't keep me sober. Getting sober friends didn't make me keep me sober. Getting a sober girlfriend didn't get me sober. You know, nothing, absolutely nothing kept me sober. And what does it mean when my life is unmanageable? Is that means that, like, when I do put down the drink, because it did happen a couple times, you know, when I did put it down, I hated life. It sucked. It was horrible. You know, I clean up on the outside and you know, get some new sneakers and nice clothes and some money in my pocket but inside I was dying. Like, actually, I don't know. I couldn't even say what it was, you know, why it was happening, but I was dying on the inside, and I couldn't describe it, you know. And then we come to a place like this, and people describe that, you know, as a spiritual malady, as anything that, I have all these great ideas, and all these plans, and all these ways to stay sober and to live life happy, but they always fail. They never work. So if you're here with a plan, saying, oh, I'm going to go to this meeting on Tuesday nights, and then we're going to go listen to this guy on Saturday, and then I'm going to hang out with these people, on, you know, that doesn't work, you know? It does not work, you know? It's my experience. And, but, totally forgot where I was going, but it's all good. So step two comes after step one, you know? No, it's Re-Gnostics in the big book. I mean, step one, you have to feel it. You got to feel it in your heart. You're like, I am absolutely screwed. You know, and I had to carry that feeling through the rest of the steps, you know. They say, like, you know, with the desperation of a drowning man, I had to want this stuff like it was air. You know, a drowning man can't breathe. I wanted to stay sober, and I wanted a relationship with God so bad like it was air for me. You know, that's just where I had to be, because I couldn't go on anymore. Because when I drank, everybody hated me, and when I didn't drink, I hated me. You know, so step two in We Agnostics, you know, a simple line, a lot, you know, it's, you know, it talks about faith, and it's really almost impossible to live a life without faith. You know, a life that originated out of nothing, going nowhere, ending in nothing. You know, I had all the faith in the world, you know, in alcohol to remove that, you know, that internal thing going on. I had all the faith in the world that the guy who was reading the book on the other side of the table, me, was sober by something more powerful than me. I had, you know, all the faith in the world that you guys, were talking about God and whatever, like, you really were genuine about it. So I said, you know, why not? You know, why not, you know, go through the rest of this process, and, you know, maybe what happened to you could happen to me, Tim. You know, I started to listen. I shut my mouth, because I always say, I know what I got to do. I have no clue what to do. I still don't know what to do, you know. So I shut my mouth and I started listening. I turned my will and my life over to the care of God. Once again, I had to make it a personal thing. You know, what does it look like if I, Kevin, turn my will and my life over to the care of God? And I had to think really well. And I sat up for a couple nights thinking about this, you know. Because I wanted to at last abandon myself to him utterly, like it says in the book. And I did that, and I thought about the prayer and what it meant, you know. And it basically, you know, I'm going to start a relationship with this higher power. And he's going to make me what he thinks I should be, you know. He's going to turn me into the person that he thinks I should be. So I could go out and show other people of his love, his power, and his way of life, really, you know. So I had to be ready. to be turned into whatever he wanted me to do, you know, whatever, you know. It's really a win-win, you know, like, because doing God's will feels awesome, and it's a good, you know, it's good in itself, you know. And step four is an inventory, you know. I never made an inventory of myself, like the book says. I always would take your inventory, and you're full of shit, and like, you know, I know what you're really doing outside of here, and you don't live this, and you know, you did this to her, and he did that to him, and you know, everybody else. I was always like, you know, like, yeah, I know you're all about all of you, you know, but like, you know, look at myself, absolutely not, you know, absolutely not, you know, because I had this delusion. It's absolute delusion that I was the, you know, the Alpha and the Omega. I was all powerful. That, you know, I had this delusion that, that had to be smashed. And really, when I put the mirror up against me, and you know, we start off by taking other people's inventory, but we get to our mistakes and our where we were to blame. I started to see, wow, this is what really kicks my ass. It's not the booze, because I put the booze down and I still feel crappy. You know, it's these belief systems, these prejudices, these old ideas, these character defects, whatever you want to call them, this way of life that just really makes me so miserable. I get so miserable inside. I need relief, and I know what gives me relief. Relief. Not freedom. Relief. You know? Temporarily. You know? I know that. You know? So we share this with a sponsor, you know, and or whoever, share with whoever, you know. And I admit to myself, I admit to God, and I admit to another human being who I really am, what I really am. There's no more, you know, there's no more costumes, there's no more, you know, playing this person, playing that part, pretending to be him and pretending to be her. You know, there's no more of that. This is me, and it's written out in pen and paper. The power of pen and paper is amazing, and it's still, I love it, you know, because I still can get so delusional and twist it up in things, and I put it down on paper, and I'm like, ah, damn it, it's my fault again. You know? And I started to see that in this fifth step, I started to see like these resentments were all my fault. You know, whether like I just like, you know, initiated something, you know, was in a relationship for whatever reason, just, I don't know, I hang out with you and I just don't like you and I don't know why I still hang out with you. Like, you know, I caused myself all these resentments. They're all my fault. And now, am I going to, like, be like, okay, this can't happen anymore. I got, like, something has to happen with this and we need to move forward, you know? Because that's miserable. Resentment sucks, you know, whatever. It cuts off the sunlight of the spirit. Insanity returns. And when insanity returns, the last thing I think I need to do is write inventory. You know, that's the last thing. And then I drink. You know, I start to think, maybe I was just going through a phase. You know, I've gotten to that place with such deep resentment. Maybe I was just like, you know, 21 years old and just needed, you know, maybe. And that's a scary place. You know, that's a scary place to be. So in step six, had all these character defects, right? These manifestations of self, you know. And not only am I powerless, I'm powerless over drinking, right? I'm powerless over alcohol. But that second part is so important that our lives become unmanageable. I have character defects that make me restless, irritable, and discontented to a point where I just want to kill myself or drink, and I can't do anything about them. I can't do anything about them. So I have to be ready to have these things removed, you know. It says humbly. What does that mean? That I am, like, the rest of the steps, humble me. It doesn't mean I get down on my knees and, oh God, I'm really humble. No, it's like, damn, I thought I was screwed in step one. I'm even more screwed now. There's no more excuses, you know. There's no more, you know, because I'm a sober person now, you know. I can't act out like I used to, you know. And in 6 and 7, you know what we're here to talk about tonight, 7, 8, and 9, is where a transformation, not of anything material, started to manifest within me, you know, started inside and worked its way out. 6 I was talking with a good friend before the meeting, and, you know, to sum it up, you know, six is, you know, I need God desperately. You know, I remember thinking, you know, having these character defects and knowing how deadly they really are, knowing what they do to me, I remember, you know, being like, there better be a God. There better be. There has to be something, or else I'm done. You know, there has to be something to take these things away from me, because I can't do it anymore. You know, and then seven is God needs me and he uses me, you know. This is where I started to have my own experience, you know, not as, you know, some circus speaker's experience, not my sponsor's experience. This is where I actually started to have Kevin's experience with God. That's how you live. See, if I have my sponsor's experience, I'm going to drink and die, you know. I need to have my own personal experience with these 12 steps and with God. I need to have a psychic change that starts from within, you know, and that's it. And certain things started to happen in my life. I started doing things that I don't normally do. I started thinking in a way that I don't normally think. I started being selfless instead of thinking I was selfless. You know, doing things for other people, but knowing, like, this is really going to help me in the end, though. No, but, like, doing things, be like, no, I just want you to, I don't know why. I just want you to feel like me, and I don't know why. You know? Helping people for absolutely nothing. You know? Whether it be somebody here, somebody outside, somebody at school, you know, somebody at work, anything. You know? I started to like be able to brush things off my shoulder. You know, somebody comes up and says something to me that I really don't want to hear. Eh, whatever, you know, it's all good. Because really, that stuff just kills me. You know, that stuff just kills me. That builds up, and it builds up, and it gets worse in my head every day. And then they said, you know, screw you, but it really turns into F you, and I want to kill you. Like, you know, like that's what goes on in my head. And like, I was able to say, you know what, like, that's all right. You know, I started to realize that it didn't matter who I was resentful at. It just, I have to start treating people better. You know, whoever it is. You know, because it really doesn't matter if I have one resentment or 100 resentments. They're both just going to kill me just as good, you know. And this transformation started to happen. And I was, like, in shock that it was really happening. Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, they said... Like, I was told, like, these things are going to happen to you, and it's going to be great, and this, but I was like, I didn't really believe them. Like, I didn't really think it was going to happen, you know, and they started to. And I would, like, did I just do that? Like, why do I even want to help you right now? Like, I have no motive behind it. See, these things surprised me and baffled me till today, you know? I don't know. But one thing I did know is that God was doing for me what I couldn't. You know, God was really, like in the third step, God is going to mold me and make me who he thinks is best. That started to happen in seven, you know. And so we get on to eight. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. In eight, I wanted to take over again and write down every person I ever said anything bad about and go out and make amends to them out of pure ego, I'm not going to lie. You know, I wanted to go around and show people how different I was now, you know. But in the book, it talks about it. We have a list. You know, it's the list we have with the fourth step, you know. I had to add a few, take a few, you know, add a few. And my experience was this, is like, I make the list and then I put it up against the rule. You know, because even though I'm not going to make amends to somebody, I still have to be willing to. You know, I have to know that deep down in my heart, I may never see this person, but deep down in my heart, if I do, I'll be willing to make amends. You know? I don't know about the people whose car I kicked in Maryland when I was, you know, 19 years old. I don't know if I'll ever see them. You know? But I have to be willing to make that amends. You know, if it just so happens that one day I'm walking along the road and somebody's like, some asshole kid kicked my car 5 years ago. Holy shit, that was me. Like, I have to be willing to do that. You know, so they go on the list. You know, even with ex-girlfriends and things like that. I'm not going to make all those amends, but they still go on the list because I have to be willing to make them, because when I am willing to make something, I'm free of it. You know, and then that's, it's just another part of self that dies. And another part of, you know, this new person who God's making, you know, is living, you know. And then, you know, we get into step 9. May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. You know, I could sit down with a list and go over it with somebody, and they could tell me who they think I owe amends to. And that's good, and that's great, and the obvious ones are obvious. But the real thing about this 9th step is that it's between me and God when it comes down to it. Again, we can't have my sponsor's experience. You know, I can't have you know, anybody else's experience but Kevin's. 'Cause I was the one that was there, and I was the one that wronged this person, and I was the one that saw the look in their eye. And if I'm not going to be honest with myself, then I'm just wasting my time. So these I always tell the guys I work with, you know, look, I don't know, you probably should make amends there, but it's between you and God. You know, these amends are really personal. Not to just me, but to me and my higher power, me and God. Because I got to feel right in my heart that I am really doing the right thing here. You know, and what the right thing really is. You know, is the right thing really to go out of my way to track down an ex-girlfriend who may be off married with children today? And you know, I don't know. For me, I don't think so. You know? Is it right for me to go up to, you know, my mother and tell her things that I don't think, you know, she would want to hear, you know? I don't think that's the easy way out at all. You know, I think that's the real way. I think that's what God would want me to do, you know? And if he wanted me to do different, I would, you know? But I had some great amends, some great conversations with people, some pure, you know, Just God working, you know, in my life. I had to make an amends not too long ago to the guy I worked for. When I was drinking and active, I stole change from him. You know, I stole change from this guy out of a change machine. And you know, that was years ago. And I'm back at work this past winter break, working for him. And I realized, holy crap, I stole from this guy. You know, I need to make this right. And what happens? Immediately, fear grips me. You know, fear. Oh, I can't do this. Can't do this. That's why it's so important to practice, even though we get into it next week, it's so important to practice the 10th step while you're out making these amends. Fear grips me. So what do? I call up one of my friends. Dude, I got to make this amends. You know, he's going to fire me. I know it. Then he's going to tell everybody in the thing, and they're going to all laugh at me. And I might go to jail, man. And, I stole like $3.62, you know. It's petty larceny, but I know, you know. And that's what went on in my head. And I got some of the best advice I ever got from one of my friends. He said, look, you're either going to make the amends or not. When you hang up the phone with me, walk straight up to the guy, because or else you're just going to keep thinking it's going to get worse and worse and worse in your head, and you're never going to make it. How long you been thinking about it already? 3 days. You know? 3 days. He said, imagine another day. I said, oh boy. I hung up the phone, went right up to him, and made the amends. Because I didn't, and you know, the guy said, well, I, you know, we exchanged. I got to talk to you. A few years ago, I did this and this and that and this and that. You know, I try to look people in the eye when I tell them these things, and anything else or anything I could do to make things right, you know. And there, here it comes. Oh, and then I bite my lip, you know. And he said, no, you know, don't worry about it, man. It passes the past. You just did what you had to do to make it right. You admitted to it, and don't do it again. I was like, whoa, like, you know, and I spent 3 days, like, not sleeping so good because of this freaking fancied fear, fake fear in my head that it's illusion, you know, that I was going to lose my job. And the truth is that if I did lose my job, that's okay too, because that just means there's another job for me, you know? Some of these amends, like, they don't go so great as that, you know? Like, but that's okay. If somebody never wants to talk to me again in my life, that's fine. Because another opportunity is going to open up, you know? See, in the ninth step, it talks about that we are fitting ourselves to be of maximum service to God. I always thought I had to be of maximum service to God. How the hell am I going to make myself maximum service to God? I don't know what that even looks like. I don't know what being of maximum service to God, and I don't know when I am and when I'm not. But I know that if I keep going through and keep making these amends, I'm fitting myself, and that He is going to use me even more. He needs more of me because it's crushing ego. Self is dying, and I'm living upon new principles, spiritual principles today. And now I'm awake, and I can see who really needs help in here. You know? I can see who's dying and who doesn't even want to say they're dying. You know? And I can see that I have no more power than the drunk still out there. The guy who is drinking in a bar right now has just as much power over alcohol that I do. You know? I've been instilled with power, but it's not mine. It's only to help other people. You know? And I could tap into it anytime I want. You know, talks about we gain access, you know, but, you know, Dr., in A Vision for You, it talks about Dr. Bob, you know, Bill goes and meets Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob says, I am absolutely willing to do whatever it takes to get sober except that, you know, and then what's that? Amends, right? He's not willing to make amends. Why? Because he's afraid he's going to lose his high standing and put his family at the risk of losing whatever they're about to lose. And he's not willing to make amends. And it says 3 weeks later or whatever amount of time later, he goes on a prodigious bender. Right? He drinks again. Dr. Bob, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, drinks again. Right? After being sober or dry for three weeks. Right? What does he do? He wakes up one morning and drinks a beer to calm his shakes, and he goes out and makes every single amends that he owed. You know, it says till midnight, right? You know, till midnight he was out. His family thought that he was out drinking again. And he came back, and after he made every single amends, and he never drank again in his life. He died sober. You know? If that's what I'm really here for, if I'm really, really here to live a life of freedom, sobriety, maximum helpfulness to others. If I'm here for that, amends are really, you know, nothing in the grand scheme of it. You know? Every door closing is another one wide open. Every amends is a relationship building, you know. Or you know, see, I'm terrified of the death of things. Not like the physical death, like of people, but like the death of a relationship, the death of whatever, you know, of my job, of this ending and that ending. I'm terrified of that stuff. But I have no control over that. And things don't really ever die. They just change. They change and they change into different things. And if I'm willing to accept that, then I'm going to be fine, you know? But I just know, I try to really stress with you know, the guys I work with that these amends are so important. I can't tell you why they're important. I mean, like, it's real action. We're out there really doing this, and it's just up to that individual. You know, it's up to me to make amends. It's up to me to get in touch with people. It's up to me to be honest with them, and it's up to me to do these things by myself. I'm not going to get a cookie from my sponsor every time I make an amend. You know, that'd be nice. I like cookies, but it's not the real deal. You know, this is, you know, this step is where I really go out into the world and say, okay, God, like, come on. I'm with you, you know, because I can't do these things on my own, you know. That it all comes back to you know, a sound, humbled spirit that I got through the prior steps, you know. Once I had a good footing in step one, you know, writing inventory wasn't really a problem. Once I truly believed that I was going to drink no matter what, except for the grace of God, and that I would obtain the grace of God through these 12 steps, it was no problem. Right, inventory? Okay. You know? Be honest? All right, I'll work on that, but, you know, okay. Make amends? Sure. You know? Continue to practice these principles every day? I'll do my best. You know? it's not about like trying to be more than human, you know, but it's about just like trying your best. You know, I've been through these steps a couple times now, and like I always you know, wanted to like run the show somewhere along the way. I always started like wanting to like do these things my way again. And it wasn't until this last time, like I said, you know, where I truly understood powerlessness. I truly understood the danger of these character defects and the danger of self-will that I surrender to God, you know. Amends are impossible by myself. You know, without God, amends are impossible. I can't look people in the eye and be honest and tell them where I was wrong. I'm so selfish and self-centered that God forbid anybody ever thinks bad about me. You know, so with this selfishness, you know, with this selfishness taken, amazing things can happen. And we'll always be the last ones to witness it, you know. But when you do start to see, it'll blow your mind. The power, the power of, I used to hate people. I said, the power of God. I sound just like them. See? It just blew my mind. But when you are stripped of selfishness, I don't know how to describe it, but it's good. So thank you for letting me share, and never hit me up.